Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 63.
63. That's German.
Well, not so bad this time. We managed to get an episode out like a week and a half later than the previous one.
Yeah, look at us. Really improving.
So we saw two shows yesterday.
The
extreme ends of the show business spectrum.
Yeah, like a $20 million musical versus probably like a
couple thousand dollar
show.
Yes. So we saw Disney's Frozen.
Oh my God.
At the St. James Theater on Broadway.
What Dream do you think? Come true. Loved every second of it. Cried a few times. I want to, like, delve into Frozen for a minute, because obviously the movie is amazing. And for people who haven't seen it, highly recommend it. But it's always interesting to see how they, turn an animated movie into a live musical for Broadway, and B, how they turn a animated shorter movie to a full 2.5 hour musical for Broadway.
Yeah.
And I think they did an incredible job.
Also an interesting piece of knowledge for people who are listening. Lorenzo Pizzoni, who was a guest previously, did a lot of the physical movement choreography or design for the show. So there is a little bit of circus influence, and you can see it in some of the physical gags that happen and some of the magic. For such an enormous show with intense, expensive projections and set design, there were actually a bunch of really old school magic tricks and physical comedy bits that really made it feel like they were staying true to classic Broadway theater showbiz devices.
So obviously everyone's waiting is there to see Let It Go, the song Let It Go. I mean, it's so good. And so Cassie Levy plays Elsa.
She was amazing. She's so good.
She's so sickeningly good. I've been obsessed with her since I saw her 10 years ago, maybe, in Hair. She was Sheila in Hair on Broadway. And then we saw her again in Les Mis. She was Fontaine.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She sang I Dreamed a Dream. That was her.
Oh, that makes sense. You got to Google, if you're into musical theater and you want to hear an insanely good voice, Google Cassie Levy.
Yeah, she's so good at singing like on the note. She encompasses the note. She's not below it. She's not above it. She's like so on the note every single time she sings. So hearing Let It Go sung so well live. I mean, when she sheds the dress, she does a quick change, basically, from her coat to the blue dress that everyone knows from the movie. And when that happened, I just started crying because it was done so well.
It was done so well. And, you know, I have to say that one of the things that I thought was really cool was the scenes they added to the story that weren't there in the movie. And I was asking Lindsay, or talking to Lindsay about, I wonder if these were originally in the treatment for the movie and they got cut for various different reasons, or if they were written from scratch. But they give much more context to Anna and Elsa's Anna and Elsa's relationship early on, prior to Anna forgetting that Elsa is magical and their relationship going down the drain a little bit.
And the little girls who play young Anna and Elsa are just like adorable.
And they have this amazing scene in their bedroom with these two huge
canopy beds
that have a really amazing magic effect that I don't want to give away. But I cannot understate how much of a good job they did doing all of the effects on this show. Like, when they announced Frozen was coming to Broadway, I was like, how are they going to build that castle? How are they going to do, like, all these different things that they did in the animation? And in my brain, I'm like, okay, so maybe you'd, like, do this, maybe you'd do that. And it really far surpassed my expectations of what they were going to do and how they would execute it.
Or they totally changed it so that they didn't even have to copy it. Like, you know, the movie opens up with an ice picking scene where they're foraging for ice cubes, but they just totally don't even show that.
Well, they keep a bit of the song.
Yeah, the song is opening, but the ice picking is gone, but you don't even feel like you're missing that, you know?
No. And what blew my mind is that this show did not get more Tony nominations. And I understand that because it's Disney, they don't want to give it to Disney because Disney's this big company with lots of money and lots of success and lots of power on Broadway. But still, for the quality of the show, it's kind of BS to not actually nominate it.
Especially Cassie Levy, who plays Elsa. I mean, she should have been nominated.
Is only nominated for Best Musical, Best Book, and Best Score. Which is, you know, those are big things to get nominated for. But the costumes, the set, the lighting design, and Cassie Levy, the main actress, really felt like snubs. Like, I was pretty, you know, just disheartens my opinion more of reviews and critics and Tony nominators and what they're actually trying to do. And, you know, I get it. It's Disney. We don't want to give Disney all the awards, or we want to give it to shows like Ben's Visit, who have more of a struggle getting there and aren't a big brand name. Yeah. But it's also kind of BS to not give awards just because it's a big brand name or nominations. I agree.
So I'm actually, like, fulfilling my childhood musical theater dreams, and I'm going to the Tonys this year.
So you can, like, walk up on stage on Ben's Visit and pull up Kanye and be like, I'm going to let you speak, Katrina Link. But Frozen was the best. Yeah,
Cassie Levy should have been nominated and won. Yeah, right.
She had the best performance all year. Like,
Miss, you're being evacuated. You're leaving and never coming back.
Yeah.
But I am excited because obviously I'm there for the Band's Visit, and I hope they win every Tony Award. But I really enjoyed Frozen. But I want Band's Visit to win because that's obviously, like, the show that we've been shepherding. So I'm super excited. I will divulge everything that happens.
What
hopefully something
Tony's?
Happens. I think it's like June 10th.
June 10th. It's coming up.
It's coming up. So I have to. I didn't think I was going, and now I just found out yesterday I'm going, and I didn't get a dress because I was like, I'm not going to go. And then I got the invite, and so now I'm like, oh no, I got to get a dress. It has to be formal wear, formal attire.
So we went from seeing what's probably a $20 to $30 million blockbuster musical that I'm sure will be a hit for many years to come to the Bindlestiff 2018 Cabaret, which, you know, is really the opposite end of the spectrum. Bindlestiff is always on a budget, always do things bare bones.
Nonprofit.
We've talked about them a bunch. We've had Keith Nelson, who is the co-founder, on the show before. Actually, a pretty fun show because Mr. and Mrs. G were in it, who are the Crossbow acts.
If you have not seen them live, you have to go see the show just to see them.
Yeah, we're putting this out on Thursday. The show is running all the way until Sunday, so you do have a chance to see it if you listen to the episode today or tomorrow or Saturday. Yeah. Go buy your ticket. See Mr. and Mrs. G live. They are amazing. Keith is hilarious, as always. So, the cutting room is kind of a weird space, though,
cutting room
I'll be
is
honest.
A weird space. I have this question, okay? Maybe I'm in the minority, but I do not like, I think I mentioned this before, but I really, really, really don't like watching trapeze with girls in heels. Like, I really, really dislike it. Like, because the arch of your foot, or just watching you in bare feet on a trapeze or on any apparatus, I think is, like, so much more beautiful because, like, of the lines it creates with your leg, and this heel and the shoe, like, really takes you out of that. And, like, watching a leg trying to wrap around, like, a rope of a trapeze with a heel on looks really clunky. And so that's one question I have. And then two, I also don't get when people are doing trapeze and wear, like, longer flowy things, because every time you're upside down, it, like, falls over your face,
right?
And then you have to, like, uncomfortably, like, you know, like, get it back down.
I think depending on, like, who your character is in the act, you can sort of compensate with the dress. And I think the performer Chloe, who did it at the Beatles of Show, did have actually a pretty good character performance, and she was charismatic, so I think she managed to make it not seem too weird. But I do agree about the shoes, and I think part of the thing about wearing high heels in any act, whether it's on wire or on trapeze, is that I don't know that, like, men particularly can relate to the additional difficulty that the shoes put on. Like, it doesn't really add an aesthetically pretty thing to it.
No.
It does make sense that, okay, maybe now it's more difficult because you're wearing high heels.
I don't know, because it also looks to me, like, easier because it's, like, plunked in, like, the bar's, like, in between the heel and the base of the foot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's not easier, but I also don't know how much harder it is. And I don't know that it's so clear how much harder it is that you're actually getting much for your effect.
Right. I agree with you.
Speaking of circus, I guess maybe we should have said this after Frozen, but Paramore, which is a Cirque du Soleil show that was on Broadway for a year before they were booted out of the theater by Harry Potter. is going to Hamburg, which is actually where all of my German family lives. So there's not a decent chance I'll see it. They're doing it with Stage Entertainment, which is a Russian-based large European theater producer and theater owner. And it was so funny reading the press release that Cirque put out, because they really sold it like it was this smash hit on Broadway, and that leaving after a year was like was a sign of success. And just the amount of PR spin they put on it, yeah. I was like, wow, somebody really turned that story around into something successful about why you're going to Germany. And I'm sure it'll be great in Germany. I wonder if they'll translate it. I wonder how big Hamburg is as a city and with an audience. I know it's a pretty decent theater city. Maybe I'll ask my cousins about it. But they were very clever to say, but we're not abandoning New York. We still have the NFL experience. We still have Volta. That's in Uniondale.
They are abandoning New York.
Well, I don't know. They do. They didn't do they close always down do stuff there? Here.
Didn't Scott Seiger leave?
Cirque Theatricals? I don't know the details of that, really. They don't, Cirque only publishes the exciting things we're doing,
right,
and it's,
want.
You know, us digging up the bad things that have happened post is right. only really through word of mouth,
right.
And I don't know what's going on with Scott Seiger and Cirque Theatricals these days, other than that they're going to Germany. So, best of luck with Paramore in Germany.
Yeah.
I wonder, it'd be very interesting to see all those lyrics done in German about the golden age of Hollywood.
That's
exactly.
my only
That's
German.
What it will sound like. Another fun piece of news. Our friends at the Muse are opening up a second location, actually pretty close to our apartment. It's in Gowanus.
Yeah, maybe I can take those, silks classes.
Looking, I think it's going into the Robot Foundry, which is a building that, like, little kids can build robots in. But it's kind of like a shoebox space with not very high ceilings, so I'm not totally sure what the Muse will teach there. But I believe it opens June 1st with their grand opening on June 10th, so we'll definitely check that out and, let you know.
Same day as the Tonys. Oh, they're up against the Tony Awards.
I wonder if people are going to go if they'll all be at the Tonys.
I don't think it's a different crowd. Yeah.
I think so, too.
Well, we have a fun episode today. So every time Josh edits the podcast, I'm usually in the room. And sometimes I'm like, oh, that was a stupid question that I asked her. But most of the time, I'm like, oh, that was pretty good. This episode, I was listening to myself and I was like,
You were flummoxed.
I was flummoxed. And, so on the podcast,
we have Cirque Us, which is a new circus collective touring New England and New York this summer. They're all young kids, most of them off of Smirkus. We have their founder, Doug Stewart, along with performers Lindsay Barrows, Marika Daly, and Ivan Jeremin.
It's been a while since I've talked with people around the age of 20, and I had a hard time. I had a hard time.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. They're the nicest kids and, have really interesting ideas. I think it's because we're just used to talking with people with more experience. And I didn't want to ask questions that, I don't know. I was like, what is the right questions to ask at this for you at this point of your life, And I was having a hard time asking the right questions for this stage of their lives. It's almost like I forgot, because I'm not in this. I did not grow up in the circus world. I really grew up in theater. And if it was like 20-year-olds in theater, I'm like, I live that. I understand where you are, and I get the struggle that you're currently facing as a theater person. But circus, I'm like, it is different. And I think that's where I was having a hard time, because I just don't. I didn't live that. I didn't experience that. And it's not that I can't understand or ask the right questions, but I was having an internal struggle of is this a stupid question? Is this a bad question? Is this a good question? And I haven't had that ever when we've been having an interview. So
nothing like some 20-year-olds to stump Lindsay. If you are going up in a tough business negotiation with Lindsay and I, bring out your 20-year-old and it'll be just fine. I thought it was actually quite interesting talking to them about how they see the current circus landscape in the U.S., because, now we're looking back on it, and some of these kids are, hoping to be in the circus industry or currently are in the circus industry, and getting a sense of if their worldview is different from my worldview at their age. Easy, of course, for me to relate to, because I was in Smirkus and I was in the position these kids were in. And, you know, they had interesting things to say. So I think you'll enjoy it. Cirque Us is a really cool show. They're touring all summer. We're going to talk about that tour. They're going to be in Brooklyn. Yeah.
Well, it's a great podcast for people who didn't go to circus school, but have a group of friends and they want to do a show. And just like learning about kind of how you get started on a smaller scale and how you can really start creating something that you want to be a part of. You know, I think it's a good story for that.
Totally. So before we get into the podcast...
Yeah, before we get into the podcast, here's our asks for the week. They're always the same. If you like our podcast, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter tweet us, rate us on iTunes, subscribe on iTunes, or anywhere you listen to your podcasts, like Overcast. We're trying to get on Spotify. Are we on Spotify?
I think it's easy to get on Spotify. I'm just like a tech idiot and can't figure it out.
So we'll maybe be on Spotify. And email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. We really do enjoy getting emails from everyone. So if you are thinking about it,
or you have questions you want us to tackle on the show.
Yeah, but do not email us and say, Lindsay was super awkward on this week's podcast. Because I already know.
All right. Enjoy your episode with Cirque Us. Hey guys, thanks for coming over to our apartment.
Thanks for having us.
Would you guys mind saying your names and where you're from and what you guys do in the circus?
All right. My name is Ivan German. I am from Montpelier, Vermont. I grew up there my whole life. In the circus, I'm primarily a clown and an acrobat.
Okay, my name is Marika Daly. I'm from Albany, California, and I started circus at Kinetic Arts Center in Oakland. And I do primarily handstands and acrobatics.
Awesome.
I'm Doug Stewart. I'm from Walpole, Massachusetts. And in the circus, I'm an aerialist, mostly.
I'm Lindsay Burrows. I'm from Arinda, California. And I primarily do handstands.
Great. So we have like two East Coasters and two West Coasters. Get a little bit of the difference in vibe. Doug, maybe I'll start with you. How did you get into circus in the first place?
I actually got into circus totally by accident. My mom was trying to find this activity to like get me out of the house, and so she tried to sign me up for gymnastics, and I just didn't have the discipline for it at all. But next to the gymnastics class, there was this like circus acro class thing happening, and I was like, that's what I want to do. Mm. And I wasn't good enough to be in that class. I was in the like pre-class, and there were some people in that class that were in Circus Smirkus. And so one day we all took, like, the school took a field trip to see Circus Smirkus. And I was like, that's what I want to do. So then I like kept saying that, like, pre-class until the next year when I was able to join the circus class.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of how it happened.
Were you all in Smirkus at some point? Were you in Smirkus?
Yes. We all toured together in 2014. They all did more years than me.
How old are you guys?
I am 20.
I'm 21.
I'm 22.
I'm 20.
Nice.
It's good. Right? We have, it's like a nice, it's like we haven't had any guests at this point of their lives.
So when you guys were doing Smirkus, were there, I guess maybe before Smirkus, do you have like shows, are there any particular shows that were like super inspiring as like kids that made you want to see circus? I know for a lot of people in our generation, like Traces was that. Is there like a circus show that you saw and were like, that's it for me?
Birdhouse Factory. Yeah.
What's Birdhouse Factory?
Birdhouse Factory, it came to San Francisco when I was very young, and it was the first time I'd ever seen anything quite like it. I didn't really know what circus was. I thought it was that like, creepy thing that people do in tents. But like, Birdhouse, like, went to the theater, and it was just mind-blowing because it was just people moving with their bodies, and there weren't other props or other effects. It was just people, and that was so cool.
Are they still around?
I don't think so. I think the show closed a couple years ago.
Yeah. I think it's the company might still exist, but the show doesn't.
What's the company? Do you know?
Is it Circus Mechanics?
Yeah,
Circus Mechanics, right?
Okay.
That's started by the dude who did the original German Will Act in Kidam, for those who have seen that video.
Fun fact.
The founder of that company.
Josh is full of them.
How about you guys? Any circus shows you saw as kids that were like, that's it?
I saw Rain.
Oh, yeah.
When I was like 8.
Circa Wash show,
yeah.
Rain?
Or maybe I was younger. I don't know. And it blew my mind.
That's the show
like,
that Joe Pinzon
was
in.
Mom, that. So, yeah.
You're like, I want to get wet and do circus on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
So what show did you see that you were like?
I actually saw Cirque du Soleil as well. I watched ID for the first time. It came through Burlington, Vermont. And
I
was blown away because it combined breakdancing, which I've done since I was young, and also these other circus talents into this wonderful phenomenon of
crazy. How did you get into breakdancing in Montpelier?
There's a studio. Some of the older kids in my high school, they were dancing, and I just watched them one day at a school assembly, and I was like, oh, that looks cool. I should do that. And then just took classes the next week.
Oh, nice. And did they go to the Flynn? Is that the theater that's around there?
Yeah,
ID is a super cool show. Mm-hmm. Love the hip hop combo.
Do you still do dance, or do you? That's great.
And maybe you'll see some in Circus this summer.
Yeah,
yes.
I know. We will talk about Circus later.
Yeah.
What show did you see?
It was actually Smirkus in 2006. That was the first.
When you went as a school trip, or
I was 10. So that was the first like circus show I saw, and it just like blew my mind. And also seeing my friends in the ring too was like really inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys all did Smirkus 2014, all over that, plus various years before or after, I guess. Is something you guys feel like you took away from Smirkus that was like particularly valuable and special?
For me, I think I learned that the thing that makes circus the most enjoyable is doing it with people that you really appreciate and respect and love. That's what Smirkus really has, is that love and community and that like troop mentality. And I think that was the biggest takeaway, because I'd never done anything quite like that before and had that like family seems kind of soft, but it really is like a family at the end of the day.
Totally.
For me, it was actually like my experience on Smirkus that shaped and was the true inspiration for founding Circus. And the biggest takeaway I got was how, and like this was totally my impersonation, but they told you how much like Circus can affect other people, and like the whole tour, you're raising money for other organizations, and people are coming up to you after the show telling you how much you made them happy, or you made them smile, and you made them laugh. And just like, to me, when I do circus, it's not about for myself, it's not about what we create, it's like what we can share, how we can make a difference, how we can make someone's day, even if it's by giving them money to like rebuild a park like Midnight Circus does, or if it's like Smirkus who's founding this like awesome educational program for different schools, or if it's just us making someone laugh and have a positive experience for an hour. Like, that's why I do circus, and that's what I want circus to be. So that's the thing I took away from it.
I was just thinking, God, you're a nice person. I'm like, okay, I better like this show that I'm making, because I gotta watch it. I wish I was just like, oh, everyone's enjoying it. But that's the like producer me. That was not good enough. We will go over that in notes.
I still have that too.
Yeah, I think you have to, right?
Yeah.
For me, there's too many things that Smirkus, because it's a circus. It was like my first like real circus experience, so it kind of taught everything that you can learn from that. Honestly, well, not everything. I'm sure things to come. But like Lindsay was saying, it's the community and the being equal with everybody on the lot, like not just your peers and like the other Smirkos, also the staff. Mm-hmm. Everyone is in it together, and we're all working for the same thing, no matter your age or anything, your background, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think for me, I remember being the kid in the front of the ring watching Smirkus shows my entire childhood, being so excited to see the performers. And then once I got on tour, and once I was one of those performers looking down at the kids in front of me again, inspiring the next generation of future touring Smirkos, it was so powerful to really inspire just people doing the best that they can for the community around them.
So I'm wondering if you guys can also talk a little bit about, and not everybody needs to answer if they don't want to, but I would be curious to hear, what happened after Smirkus? Like, you finish it, I'm sure maybe some of your parents were like, go to regular college. Some of your parents were like, it's cool to go to circus school. And other people were like, I'm not going to do all that, I got to figure it out. Like, what is, I think that's a big struggle for people of like, what do I do when I get out, and how do I get like in the biz? And
I think part of it is that there's something in youth circus that you can't quite get the same professional circus. Mm. And it's that feeling of just genuine love, because there's no money exchanging really happening. Or like, it isn't about that. It's because you're doing this because you love it. And so there's kind of this fear of going into it as a professional adult that you will lose that, and then it will become a job, and then it'll become something you resent because of that. So that, I think for me, that transition from being in youth circus to professional circus is plagued with that fear. But then I realized, as long as you are with, again, the community and with the people you love, and you're making art that you enjoy, then you're doing it all right. We'll be okay.
Yeah, I think also in youth circus, there's this big push, and there's this big mentality of, you go to youth circus, you go off to a Canadian circus school, then you go to work for a certain set of companies, and that's kind of the definition of success in the circus world.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just saying to my family, like, I don't want to go to college. And everyone was like, wait, or friends and family being like, what do you want to do? And I was like, oh, I want to go spend this year in Vermont doing trapeze. And everyone's like, what's that mean? And no one kind of got it. And then I was all, like, I...
Did you go to NECA? Is that
I
where
went
you...
to NECA, yeah. Okay. And I auditioned for...
New England Center of...
New England Center for Circus Arts.
Yeah, we had Elsie on the podcast. Sorry, I cut you
so
off.
So, in high school, I had also auditioned for ENC, and then when I was at NECA, I auditioned for ENC again, and I didn't get in, and I remember having this big, like, dilemma for about, like, 2 months, and I was like, do I stay at NECA? Do I go to, like, normal people college? Like, what do I do? And it was just, like, this crazy situation, because I feel like by giving up, by, like, not pursuing... circus school, I felt like I wasn't going to be a circus artist and that this career was going to be over for me. And it was like, I feel like there's just had such this like stigma. If you're not doing circus a certain way, you're not actually doing it. And I think that's really hard for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And like to bring it back to circus, I think that's like a really cool thing. It's like, oh, you don't need to do that. You can just find some people and make your own show.
Well, let's talk about circus for a moment. How did that, like, what was the genesis of that?
It actually started from me not getting into ENC or any of those schools and then being like, my career is over. I'm not going to be as talented of a rope artist as these high level, like, acrobats that the school produces, which is amazing that they're doing that. And I was like, I will not get booked over them. If I'm auditioning against anyone that went to that school, I'll never get that thing. So how can I create opportunities for me to perform? How can I create opportunities for my friends who didn't go to that school to perform? And that was the, like, original catalyst for the idea, and then it stemmed into so much more.
So let's hear more of the story. So that's the original catalyst, and then you're like, okay, cool, I got an idea. Now how do I make it a reality?
So then I went to Columbia College Chicago, and I was a theater major, and I lasted about 1 week before I realized I hated the theater department.
It's very different. That's my background, theater. Musical theater, specifically. Yeah, and it's like, it's funny because I talked to Josh about his childhood and my childhood, and like doing theater and being super judged on something that's very subjective versus circus, where you're like, you can either do a flip or you cannot do a flip.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a little bit easier to be like, I can work on getting better, or like, and I can prove that I'm also talented because I can juggle six balls, or I can't. And with theater, it's like so much bitchier.
Yeah.
She's like, I love your voice, but this other person like hates it.
Yeah,
you know, vice versa.
Or you're competing for the same roles. Well,
yeah.
In the circus, if you're both two amazing people who can juggle six, then you can do an act where you juggle 12.
Yeah.
Two people can't play, you know, King Lear and Shakespeare at the same time.
No.
But it's funny because I feel like circus is getting so subjective too, because even in the past few years, the skill level keeps increasing. Like before, like when someone was doing like four Diablos, there was like a handful of people in the world that can do that. And now there's like, that's like the baseline if you're a Diabloist. So it's now... It's crazy how that's changed the circus world, too.
Yeah, but still there is that baseline,
something
right?
Something must
have
happened that first week that was like, this isn't for me. It wasn't just, right?
Yeah.
Like a teacher
just,
or a class or like a...
It was just me kind of... There was kind of two things. It was one, I had just spent a year in NECA doing theater, physical theater classes, and I was like, I don't want to spend another 4 years. It kind of felt lower level than what I was doing at NECA.
Mm.
And the way my school works is their philosophy is anyone can get into any program and they don't need any experience, because they believe that if you didn't have access to it as a kid, they'll teach you that. But I was in a class with people that are like, this is my first time ever doing theater. And it was like really slow paced and really like boring. And then there was also some people in that class that I looked around and I was like, I was not meant to be an actor. They are a lot better than me. I was like, I'm better at circus. So then I switched majors. And also at that time I was taking one, it was called Business of Performing Arts. It just is an elective. And I fell in love with that class. And I was like, oh, that's what I want
to
do.
God bless you. There needs to be, like, one of you every generation of circus,
right.
Which I think there are, generally speaking, like, one person. It's like, I'll take business classes. And so you take some business classes. You're at college. How did you wrangle everybody? Were they all into it?
The first year, it was a lot of me, like, going up to people and like, guys, I have this crazy idea. I don't know what we're going to do, but just, like, come with me. This thing will be awesome. Marika was in the first year. Do you remember how that went? Because I remember sitting down next...
What was the first call like that he Facebook message or whatever?
I don't even know. This was, like, a long time.
Yeah,
because
it started in, like, 2014. Because in 2014, when I was on Smirkus, I'd pick Judy, I would pick her brain apart. She's the operations director for Smirkus. And I'd be like, how do you do this? How do you do this? And I was just, like, gathering all the information that I could. And then I remember one specific conversation. I was visiting training in 2015, and Sam Furlow sat down, and I ran over to him, and I was like, hey, what are you doing next summer? And he's like, I don't know. And I was like, don't do anything. We're going on tour. So it was the summer of 2015 where I started, like, recruiting people. And I remember at Smirkus Camp, I, like, ambushed Sam Gerwitt in the bathroom. And I was like, not letting him leave until he, like, agreed to go on tour with us. And he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I was like, doesn't matter. You're coming with me.
How did you guys fund it?
The first year, we were entirely crowdfunded.
So and Kickstarter then, or Indiegogo kind of
thing? Well, not entirely. We were 90% crowdfunded, and we used GoFundMe. And then all the artists had to pay a small fee up front to cover the cost of housing and training for the creation period.
Gotcha.
So were you, the first year you guys did it, were you all, like, in the interim between years of Smirkus?
That was, for me, I was 2 years out, and I think me and Sam Gurr were 2 years out, and I think everyone else... And Marika.
But I was sneaky. I didn't have
You could have. But everyone else. Yeah. So everyone either 1 or 2 years out of Smirkus.
Oh, okay. And so did you, when you graduated Smirkus, were you like, I'm doing, what did you do? Did you go?
I went to the prep year of Quebec, school in Quebec. And then I did Smirkus. And I did not get back into Quebec. And I traveled many miles back to Quebec. I know I was going to tell you all this. So then I went to California and I trained at home. And Lindsay and I were like, we should do a handstand duo because she was still in her last year of high school. And then we're like, ooh, that'll be cool. And then we did it. And then we auditioned for ENC and we didn't get in. And then we're like, all right, whatever.
It's
and
fine. Then, you know, ENC.
I didn't get in
no, Josh didn't get in either.
Yeah.
But skill level doesn't mean everything, right? Like the performance and like the personality and like the connection with the audience, like boring.
Having said that, what do you think the way to train clowning is after Smirkus?
Well, clowning's one of the things that. There's no specific way to train it without just being whenever you can in any opportunity you see throughout the day. Just try to interact with it in a way that you don't conventionally do. Just try to see the world in a different perspective and make people laugh or make yourself laugh at least, and then maybe someone else will as well.
Do you feel like the word clowning is like tough for you? Do you find yourself when you're talking to people who aren't circus people using a different word from clowning, or do you like embrace it?
Oh yeah, a lot of people. I went to school in South Carolina for the past 2 years, and a lot of people there, when they heard that I was in the circus, that I was a clown, they didn't really understand what it was. They just thought they. A lot of people were actually scared of clowns. A lot of my friends were actually terrified of me being in clown face and doing the things that I do. It's been a long process to try to convince my friends to really accept a circus in a different form than they've been, than they've seen through media or horror films or.
Welcome to America.
Yeah.
And convincing people about circus.
Exactly.
What are you studying at school?
I'm a BFA physical theater.
That's spot on.
Yes. Yeah,
it's didn't chip in.
Yeah, where were you just like zoning out?
Physical theater? Are you? What's the difference between physical theater and regular theater?
Well, that's the question. I see physical theater as the bridge between all disciplines that aren't necessarily musical theater or straight realistic acting. Physical theater is the bridge between dance and movement and circus and other. Forms of theater. It's really about group creation is a main part of it. So I see physical theater as a way to do really whatever I want. Anything that I want to perform and share with the world, I can get a group together or just do it myself. And if people want to see it, then it works out.
Great. So who would you say is like the dude who's, or the lady who's like crushing physical theater at the moment? Besides you.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Well, a few names come to mind for me. One is like our friend Spencer Novick,
right?
Who I feel like is a genius. And then I think Volky from who is the gazillionaire character in Absinthe. Like he is really amazing, and probably like Lorenzo.
You've seen James Tiori show,
and obviously Bill
Irwin. Had the chance to see one of those.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I feel like I've shown them various clips, but definitely that is. I should show this to you.
Yeah,
oh,
YouTube James too when you get home. So jumping back to Cirque Us for a moment. You get the gang together. You convince enough people to do it. You raise a little bit of money. Then what?
Then we kind of had no idea what we were doing. It was actually because I had to get confirmed yeses from a cast before I could even start booking a theater. So I had to get the cast to confirm in like January. And then I had from February to May to plan an entire summer, whereas now the summer is planned in December going forward. So it was like very short period of time. We got to NECA, and also some people were still in school at the time, so we had to start at the end of June.
Mm.
And we had a 12-day creation period, and then we did a 4-week tour, and we did about...
Is this a show that was like trash themed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we did 22 shows on a 4-week tour.
Where'd you guys go?
We went all over New England, and then the most south we went was Philadelphia, and then we also went like western New York, so like Hillsdale and Ithaca.
How did you find the theaters?
It was the biggest struggle in 2016 because I had no idea what I was doing because I had only had 1 year of business classes and I hadn't gone to any of the ones that had anything to do with, like, what we're doing. So I literally just had to, like, Google other shows that had done tours, Google theaters, Google towns that I knew had, like, markets for circus in them. And I probably sent out, like, 500 emails. And for every 50 emails I would send out, I'd get 3 responses and 2 of them would laugh at me and 1 would say, hey, let's talk. And then of the ones where we talked, maybe like a half of them worked. But our venues were kind of anything. We performed in a barn. We performed in a bunch of circus schools. We performed in some proper theaters. We performed in retirement homes a couple times our first year. So we were literally taking anything we can get. And our tour schedule is like all over the place. Like we were driving across New England, like back and forth with no rhyme or reason. Like if a theater said they were available on that day, I booked it. Like, didn't matter where we were the day before.
So where in the last, you guys been filming for 3 years or 4 years?
We're about to go on to our third tour.
So about to do your third tour. So the first 2 years, what was like the best tour stop? And if you, maybe if it's not on your tour list still, what was like your most surprising, challenging stop?
Do you have an answer?
Were there any audiences in weird places? Because you know you guys are organizing.
Yeah, actually one of my favorite places to go to is Hillsdale, New York. We perform at Medeby Farm and Arts. It's this beautiful barn in the middle of nowhere, New York, and we do sellout shows when we're there, and it's amazing. The first year we were there was because one of our performers, Sarah Tiffin, her grandmother lives in that town, and they were like, oh, there's this barn you could perform at, and we were like, okay, and I emailed them, we set it up. I had never been there, I'd never seen the place. It actually turned out our aerial rig didn't even fit in the space, so we had to set it up at one leg shorter.
It's
a freestanding rig, so we had to set it up one leg shorter, and we had to do like, we got there and we were like, oh my god, how are we gonna do this show? So we had to like reblock everything, change everything, and then we had a sold out show and the audience loved it because this is such a small town, but there's also a circus community in this town because there's one of the Smirkus residency coaches is from there. So she has this little like community of people that juggle and do like some clowning. So when we came in there for them to see like, and because this is out of Smirkus's like area, they don't tour there. So for them to see like actual like circus performers in their town and like in the center of their hometown was just like mind blowing for them. And they were we got standing ovations after like each act went. It was incredible.
That's nice.
We did one show there our first year. And then the second year we did 2 shows there and we sold out both. Like, and we would be in the grocery store when we were there the second year. People were like, you're from the circus. We remember you from last year. We can't wait. And people, like, knew our names. They, like, it was crazy.
Dang.
Yeah.
So what's your creation process like for your shows? Are you about to start a new one?
Mm-hmm. So our creation processes start usually in February, and it starts online because we're from across the country. The past 2 years, we've been dealing with people who are on opposite sides of the world. So we usually have, like, a group Skype once a month where we kind of talk about, like, what we want the show to look like, what acts people want to do, who's in the show, what can people do. And then from there, it kind of trickles down into the show itself. The first year, it was very ensemble-driven. There was, like, no real director. So it was just entirely derived from the ensemble, which was really cool. The second year, we had a director. And so it was ensemble-driven as well with the guidance of a director. And that's what we're also doing this third year as well.
Who's helping you guys direct?
This year, we're actually really excited to be working with Jesse Dryden as our director.
Oh, great.
So Jesse was the director for Circus Smirkus for the past 10 years. So we've all worked with him before in some capacity, or most of us have.
Nice.
So.
And can you say the theme? Have you announced it?
Yeah, the theme is called Starstruck, a Cosmic Circus.
Awesome. So space? Is that
kind of. Ooh, it's a mystery. It derived from, like, we were talking about zoo, and then we were also talking about, like, what was it? Superstitions.
Astrology.
And then somehow zoo and superstitions matched with astrology, which brought us to space, which brought us to Starstruck. So right now there's 10 people in the show, and each person is personifying a different planet.
Ooh,
and then we have one astronomer, so it's very, like...
Do we still have 10 planets, or did we, like, lose one?
We have 9, but, like, Pluto's kind of... Sometimes
on the border.
Yeah. I kind of don't know where Pluto stands. So Lindsay's playing
Pluto.
Lindsay's also a clown.
What are you stressed out about this summer? Like, what are the upcoming challenges? What are the upcoming excitements?
Everything. One thing that's always stressful is building the show in just 3 weeks. Like, because although we've been writing it since February, we haven't actually been together to actually, like, train the skills.
Well, you guys meet to make it.
We're actually creating our show again at the New England Center for Circus Arts. They have a new program called a company in residency program where circus companies can go, and they have a matching grant from the NEA so that we pay 50% of the fees and NECA pays 50% of the fees, and then they house us, we get training space, we get a artistic director, and lighting, video, all this stuff is in this really awesome package.
Dang.
And they do 3 of them a year. So there's, if you want to apply for that company, the info is at NECA's website, but there's actually going to be another show in creation while we're there as well. So that's going to be kind of cool to see another company working as we create
a
show.
Cool. Do you know what the other company is?
I have no idea. I don't know anything. I just know that there's another company, then we overlap with them by 1 week. So they'll be opening their show a little bit after us.
Cool.
And I think it's a 1 or 2 person show. So it's a much different company.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
1 person show. Whew. Those are always hard.
Yeah.
So, do you guys see, as future circus performers, people who work in the circus business, like a lot of opportunity for you in the U.S., or are your brains like, all right, we'll do this for a bit, and then I gotta get out of here to get a job? Where is, like, you're thinking about it?
My brain's definitely, like, stick around here, like, monopolize the market that
yeah.
I can get into, and then I want to go to Europe.
To Europe, yeah.
As soon as possible, yeah.
Lindsay's nodding her head like,
oh,
yeah,
I'm with
right
Marika.
On.
Marika and I work together. We do handstands together, and we're building an act that I think is going to be different and unique, and we want to take it to as many places as we can. But we also have, we know a lot of people around here through Smirkus and through us doing circus in California because we were in the same youth troupe. And so there's a lot of opportunities offered out here as well. And, like, there's so many new experiences to have within the state still.
You know, honestly, I actually don't think we've had that many people who have trained originally in California, particularly of, like, your generation. Can you talk a little bit about, like, what that scene is like and what the schools are and, like, just for somebody who's never been to that part of the country, what it's like to train there?
So we're from the San Francisco area, like East Bay. So our gym is in Oakland. It's called Kinetic Arts Center. And we were in the youth troupe called Circus Fire when we were, like, 10 years old. And that's where we originally met, and Marika was, like, you know, very talented and, like, a year older, and I didn't do anything. I couldn't, like, I, like, scooted my way into the troupe somehow. And, but we grew up doing circus together, and same with Sarah Tiff and a bunch of people who we ended up going to Smirkus with. And there's a lot of different places. There's Circus Center in San Francisco. There's Trapeze Arts also in Oakland. And then there's also, like, other smaller places where you can train. So there's a huge circus community. And a lot of different companies. I think circus is in higher demand.
So if you're in California, how do you hear about Smirkus?
Well, Sarah Tiffin, our friend from Circus Fire, her older sister, Frances Tiffin, was on tour. Yeah, and so we saw it, like, through this older generation of circus people in our troupe, and we're like, wow, that is really cool, because we stay really local when we're doing circus there, and we wanted to go on tour, and we wanted to see a new part of the country, and so it was an opportunity for us to go and meet people who do circus from different parts of the country.
Were your parents like, you're going all the way to Vermont?
Yeah.
And
yeah, my parents didn't let me audition for an extra year. They were evil. No.
Oh my gosh, I love watching the old audition tapes. Like, I saw Josh and Seb Cairns, audition tape is so funny. They did, like, a hand-to-hand kind of thing.
Yeah, audition with hand-to-hand. 2-dude hand-to-hand. So, he ended up being, like, a contortionist, and I'm doing the business. None of us were really thinking. So Europe for you two. How about you guys? I mean, there's more physical theater opportunity in the U.S. for sure than...
Yeah, so when you graduate,
circus.
What's your idea? Do you want
to... Well, actually, I'm going over to Italy next year for the whole year to study at Accademia dell'Arte.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So I'll be looking at all of the circus Italian connections in that area and seeing what I can branch out while I'm out there.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Italy's a great place to train that.
For sure.
And Doug, congratulations on graduating, like,
yeah.
A week ago.
Yeah.
Undergrad.
That's funny. Josh was like, he went to Columbia. I was like, what? He's a alma mater. And he's like, no, in...
Different Columbia.
Oh, in Chicago. I was like, But still, it's funny that we both all went to Columbia.
Right. So you finished college. Are you, like, after Circus, what's your feeling?
My plan is to... This also goes back to Circus in America. I want to... My goal for Circus is just create more work in America, and I want to turn Circus into a full-time, full-year-round organization now that I actually can do that, and I think I want to do that through smaller runs instead of just, like, massive tours, because I think those are harder to produce financially, and also, like, it's kind of hard being on the road for many months at a time, and I feel like if we can create an organization that has many short tours and many short projects, but works with the same pool of people. That'll allow us to grow as a company and also allow artists to work with us, also take opportunities to go out and work with other companies. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh, I'm committing to this thing for 2 years or 3 years. It's like, oh, I'm going to do a 3 month run and then I'm going to go do something else. And it will allow us to do more stuff.
One of my favorite things about your company is the name Cirque Us. How did that come to be?
I like how you guys all turn and look at me slowly.
And maybe you could spell it, because I think it sounds straightforward to people, but...
No, it's C-I-R-Q-U-E space U-S. and only in the logo. originally, there was an exclamation point in the name, and then we... Because of the LLC when we wrote it, and then I was like, oh, that was a bad idea. And then we slowly dropped it.
Yeah.
Very confusing. But, I remember going I remember sitting on my bed in my dorm room and having like lists of name and like crossing them out. And I was like, I can't do it. And I had this list of like English names and I had all the names of like French names, but I didn't really want a French company, like a French name, because we're not a French company.
No.
And then I forget exactly, I think I just said like circus or I just kept saying it over and over until I said Cirque Us. And I kind of like it now because it's French meaning circus and us meaning community, collective, and that's kind of how we are as a company. Like, and it's always ensemble based. It's always about ensemble work. So I think it's really fitting.
Oh, I was reading so much more into it that I also love about it. But I also, it says U.S. because it makes it a little bit clear it's American.
Yeah, that's
and
it's a win-win.
It's a way to, for people who are into like the Cirque style of whatever the hell that means to people,
mm-hmm.
to be like, oh, it's Cirque. But to people who are like into circus, it just sounds like the word circus. Like,
yeah.
Truly, I think it's the smartest name.
Yeah, I thought it was spelled
thank you.
Circus with a dot
time.
In the middle.
Yeah.
I like it so much more.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I get so much shit for the name
yeah.
from
oh, really?
Everyone. Everyone's like, that's a dumb name. And I'm like, no, it's genius. It's really good, actually.
It is really good.
It's also really good for marketing as well, because people hear Cirque Us and they just know that that's a circus,
mm-hmm.
even if they don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's really great.
And the us is such a nice also element of like... saying like this is our own new thing that
we
have ownership
yeah.
over. It's some identity. Yeah, I liked it when you did it, but the more I
yeah.
see it, the more I.
So when does your tour start?
We actually start in like 13 days up in NECA, creating our show, and then we open on June 21st at New England Center for Circus Arts.
June 21st.
Yes, that's a Thursday.
So where can you give some of the highlight spots for people who might be listening?
I'm going to list the full tour.
Yeah, do the
sure.
Do have to memorize. Okay, we're going to Brattleboro, Vermont, White River Junction, Vermont, Hartford, Connecticut, Brooklyn, New York, Trenton, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Hillsboro, New Jersey, Albany, New York, Ithaca, New York, Hillsdale, New York, Round Lake, New York, Greensboro, Vermont, Plymouth, New Hampshire, Cornish, New Hampshire, Ellsworth, Maine, Beverly, Massachusetts, Pawtucket, Rhode Island, Stowe, Vermont, Somerville, Massachusetts, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and then we close in Northampton.
Nice.
So you're when are you at the
Muse? What are the Brooklyn dates? Because the number one listeners live in New York for our podcast.
We are here in Brooklyn on June 27th.
Oh, exciting.
Great.
At the Muse. And if you can't catch us then, we're in Trenton and Hillsboro, which are kind of close,
yeah.
but a little bit of a hike.
Great. I strongly recommend it. Although I'm not seeing you guys live, I have seen the video of both shows, and I... watched the whole thing and very much enjoyed it. So.
I have to do that. Sorry.
Should we do the roundup?
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you've heard of the podcast, but we always ask the same three questions of all of our guests. So either Doug can answer them or you guys can jump in and give your own answers to them as well. The more, the better.
Okay.
The first question is, has there been a piece of advice somebody has given you, either super good or super bad, that has like stuck with you?
Yeah. Actually, for Cirque Us, the piece of advice I got was from one of my teachers this past year, and they said when planning a tour, you don't need to look at it by show, you need to look at it by the tour. And if you try to make everything break even, you're gonna go crazy. And so there are some shows that I book knowing I'm gonna lose money on, and I'm totally okay with that because I know I'll make up for it in other places. But the first 2 years, I would be going crazy trying to make every single thing work. And like, so that was the one piece of advice that like I took when booking this tour, and it made a whole world of difference in like not me going crazy.
Nice. How about you guys? Any other pieces of advice, really good or really bad?
Maybe it's just like a motto that somehow came into our heads. I think I can speak for all of us, but maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. Don't take yourself or anything too seriously. Just in general.
And who came up with that motto, Marika? I didn't come up with it. It's in our. That's actually our mission statement.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Put that to any area of life.
Yeah.
Man, that's a good mission statement.
So you did a mission statement for an LLC.
Yeah,
well,
I can't think of the whole
thing.
At the moment, it's our goal is to provide affordable, high-level circus to local communities while spreading the values of teamwork and remembering to never take ourselves too seriously. Because I think so many circus artists are like, they get in their head too much about it. And it's like, we're doing this for fun, you know? Like, that's why we're doing this and we're not, like, working in an office.
Yes.
You know, like, stop taking it so seriously.
Right.
Yeah, I can remind myself of it so seriously.
So the next question is, for the next generation of kids who are coming up through Smirkus or camp or doing it in California or wherever, is there like a movie, a TV show, a book, any piece of like artistic content you should be like, you guys should check that out. It'll really inspire you.
Everything.
Yeah.
Just YouTube, anything where someone's performing is definitely, you can learn from something from that. Or just watching people watch kids perform.
Not only that, but just go to as many live shows as you can. Like, books and movies are awesome too. Like, do all that, but also just seeing as many shows as you can and all types of things that you wouldn't think you'd like. Like, this year I started going to the ballet a lot and I love it.
Yes.
I never thought I would.
Josh made me go to the ballet, because I did ballet, of course, musical theater, you have to do ballet. I was like, I hate ballet, it ruined me, and then Josh was like, we're going to the ballet, and I was like, oh my god, this is so amazing. And then I met this guy that I am obsessed with, this choreographer you should check out, his name is Justin Peck. Oh my god.
Him. Beautiful.
I am obsessed with him.
I met him the other day.
Cool. I had to do this luncheon thing, it was like a Tony Award luncheon, basically. But so there were all these actors there and everyone's freaking out over them, but I was like, oh my god, it's Justin Peck. And he was like, people were like, who is Justin Peck? And I was like, well, he choreographed Carousel, the revival on Broadway, so he's nominated for a Tony Award. I was like, oh my god, he did this ballet that I'm like obsessed with, The Times Are Racing. Have you seen that one?
Yes.
Oh my god. So good. I went up to him, I like totally fangirled on him, and he was like really nice, and then I liked him even more. I was like, wait, not Justin Peck. Yeah.
So, ask the last one.
Okay, last question is, and how about you all answer this one?
Great.
Who do you think we should have on the podcast?
Flying Gravity Circus.
Ooh, where are they from?
They're from New Hampshire, Wilton, New Hampshire, and it's like this tiny youth troupe of these weird Waldorf kids. They're just so weird.
That's New Hampshire Waldorf.
Yeah.
So like the
John Reutemann.
Yeah, John Reutemann, Tristan Nielsen.
Yes.
The two juggling red trouser show dudes.
Yep.
Lil
Graham.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Flying Gravity Circus.
I was like, it's not Defying Gravity. That is a Broadway show.
David and Tobin. That's the red trousers.
Okay.
They're doing a lot of really cool things in like contemporary youth circus. And they just made a show this spring, and it was phenomenal. And John Reutemann's running it, and it's just going places, and it's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I would say someone from Midnight Circus, like Jeff or Julie.
I have been lobbying, and Jeff and Julie, if you are listening, they have lobbied them in person and over.
And we have, like, a million
so
times set up dates, and then they're like, we have to...
They're busy.
Max is... Yeah.
They're busy.
Yeah, they're a little busy, but we've literally... Yeah.
Yes, we'll get them eventually. People didn't think we'd get Hubby, and we got Hubby. So if we can get Hubby, we can get Jeff and Julie.
Well, I think you guys have already had Salam Lobby on.
Yeah.
But, Salam Circus.
Another Salam episode.
No,
I agree.
Totally, with
yeah.
Amity, too.
Yeah.
She was on it a little bit when she was... Or she was just... We just took a photo, but
yeah.
We talked to Amity, too. Because
their school is opening this August in Maine, and there's a lot... Like, now that Circus Maine is closed, it's, like, the new hub of circus in Maine, and I think they all have a lot to say about what's happening in their school.
Yeah, absolutely. We should definitely do a second Salam and bring Amity on.
Do you guys have, like... So, every time Josh and I do a show, we, like, make a little cheer that we all say before like every curtain.
Not
or, like,
a podcast, like a live show.
No, like a live show. So like, do you guys have, so like for Slumber, we did like, who disturbs my slumber? And then we all do that. But like for other shows, it's something different. Do you guys have something like that we can sign off with?
Yeah, we actually have, we have two different ones because each year we've had a different story. The first one?
No, the second
one. Oh, the second one? Yeah, so we had two different ones, but the one from last year was, we were trying to, we had this person on who was there with us all of training, and he was just our, he documented actually the entire tour last summer, so we're excited for when that documentary comes out. But one day he was filming, and we were like trying to get his attention, so we all just kind of like, Mike, 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 and then we all started chanting his name until he like paid attention, and then our chef walked in, and someone went, Trevor! And that became our pre-show chant.
Fun.
So before every show, we went, Mike, 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 Trevor!
Okay.
That's awesome!
Yeah.
So should we do it like right now?
Yeah, we should.
Okay, right? So how many mics do I have to say?
Until we feel it.
Until
you know?
I feel, oh god, it's like an acting class. Okay.
Can you read it?
Yes.
Okay. Mike.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for the podcast. It's so much fun.
Thank you.
Good luck for having us. Summer.
And that was our interview with Cirque Us.
If you like our podcast, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter tweet us, rate us on iTunes, subscribe on iTunes, or email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. Have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, enjoy the nice weather, everybody.
Bye.